Coming up, remembering Nelson Mandela. And amid the holiday shopping frenzy, a Kim Lawton report on how Christians are trying to reclaim Christmas gift giving from self-indulgence and consumerism. Also, Deborah Potter looks at the rapid growth in the number of evangelical Protestants who are Hispanic.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Tributes to Nelson Mandela have been pouring in from around the world, including from the religious community. Pope Francis praised Mandela for promoting human dignity and forging a new South Africa, quote, built on the firm foundations of nonviolence, reconciliation, and truth. Other religious leaders called him an example of overcoming hatred. And in South Africa, Anglican Archbishop Desmond Tutu said his close friend's legacy of peace and forgiveness will live on. Mandela was 95 years old. He led South Africa out of the apartheid rule of its white minority over the black majority and into a multiracial democracy. And he achieved that transition peacefully, without a civil war. Under apartheid, which often provoked violence, the white government controlled where all blacks could work and live. As a young lawyer in the 1940s, Mandela joined the African National Congress and oversaw a violent campaign against apartheid. For his resistance, he was sentenced to life in prison at hard labor. He told his supporters he would give his life, if necessary, for a democratic society.
It is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
By the time Mandela finally was released from prison in 1990, after 27 years, he had become a worldwide symbol of all campaigns for freedom, racial equality, and democracy. He had refused to bargain for his release, but international pressure helped free him. And he went on to become president of the African National Congress and then the first president of the post-apartheid South Africa.
So help me God.
In 1993, Mandela and the man who had led the all-white South Africa, F.W. de Klerk, shared the Nobel Prize for Peace. Mandela resigned after one term as president. He traveled extensively, promoting both democracy and the need to prevent and treat AIDS. Last summer, President Obama and his family visited the cell on Robben Island off Cape Town in which Mandela had been held for 18 years. Mr. Obama wrote in the visitor's book that his family was humbled to stand where men of such courage faced down injustice and refused to yield. On Thursday, the president said the entire world can draw strength from how Mandela lived.
We will not likely see the likes of Nelson Mandela again. So it falls to us, as best we can, to forward the example that he set, to make decisions guided not by hate, but by love, to never discount the difference that one person can make, to strive for a future that is worthy of his sacrifice.
When Mandela became president, after all the brutality of apartheid and his own 27 years in prison, he did not seek revenge. Reconciling the races to create a democracy was more important than getting even. In other news, President Obama this week addressed the widening gap between the rich and poor in this country, what others have called the fading of the American dream.
A dangerous and growing inequality and lack of upward mobility that has jeopardized middle-class America's basic bargain, that if you work hard, you have a chance to get ahead. I believe this is the defining challenge of our time.
Faith leaders and other groups this week heightened pressure on Congress to pass an immigration reform bill currently stalled in the House. Many have been participating in an ongoing fast for families at the National Mall, going without food for days to keep focus on the nation's estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants. Among the faith leaders who visited the fasters this week was Rabbi Steve Gutto of the Jewish Council of Public Affairs. He and others lit a Hanukkah menorah and prayed for the welfare of immigrants before beginning their fast. Also, another busy week at the Vatican. Pope Francis concluded a meeting with his 8-member International Council of Cardinals. After the meeting, officials announced that Francis would create a special commission to advise him on protecting children from clergy sex abuse. The announcement came amid growing criticism that the Pope is not doing enough to hold accountable church leaders who have covered up such abuse. Earlier, Francis met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to discuss a number of issues in the Middle East, including Iran's nuclear weapons and the ongoing war in Syria. At his weekly audience in St. Peter's Square, the Pope invited Catholics to pray for Orthodox nuns who were abducted in Syria earlier this week, allegedly by rebel forces. The nuns were taken from the predominantly Christian town of Maalula. Last month, Pope Francis issued a document in which he urged Catholics not only to minister to the poor, but to try to make the whole economic system more just. This week at Georgetown University in Washington, two prominent columnists, Michael Gerson and E.J. Dion, assessed the Pope's message.
There is something different here. I think there are three things. One is there is a radicalism and an urgency to what he is saying. And you read the language of this latest document in so many places. You know, he talks about a deified market. He talks about a system which tends to devour everything, which stands in the way of increased profits. He talks about defenseless beings. And so I think that we cannot deny that he has given a higher priority to the church's social teaching, to our obligations to the poor, and to criticism of an unjust economy than we have heard in a long time. Not that he is inconsistent with John Paul or Benedict, because they said some tough things about the market as well. But I think this is so central to who he is.
I would say that at the heart, that for all of this discussion, the reason that Francis is powerful and attractive to so many is because he talks about Jesus and because he acts like Jesus. And that is the source of power and authority in the Christian church, in all of its expressions. And I would only conclude by saying that a church that looked like this would transform the entire world.
Would transform the entire world. The Christmas shopping season officially kicked off with Black Friday and Cyber Monday, but this week many nonprofit groups also urged Americans to make charitable contributions as part of Giving Tuesday. Meanwhile, a new study has found that almost three-quarters of American household giving is to organizations with religious ties. According to the report by Jumpstart and the Indiana University Lilly Family School of Philanthropy, 41% of all household donations last year went to religious congregations, 32% went to religiously affiliated nonprofits. Every year, Christians worry that the Christmas shopping frenzy overwhelms the spiritual side of the holiday. Kim Lawton has our story about how more and more local churches are urging their members to find creative ways to avoid self-indulgence and consumerism in order to reclaim the true meaning of Christmas gifts and giving.
In Lake Junaluska, North Carolina, Bob and Diane Gayer and their sons Jarek and Clay are doing a little Christmas shopping. Not at the mall, at their church. Long's Chapel United Methodist Church sponsored an alternative Christmas market where various booths offered gift ideas that supported local and international charities. Diane says projects like this help her family set a different tone for Christmas.
It's a very tricky time for the family.
It
is expensive, and we live in a real me society, so the children always think of themselves first, and it's as a parent you want them to think of others.
The tradition of giving Christmas presents is often tied to the Magi, or wise men, who, according to the Bible story, brought precious gifts to the baby Jesus. But many Christians say that tradition has gotten out of hand.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Amid all the shopping frenzy, more and more church leaders are speaking out against self-indulgence and consumerism.
It's kind of hijacked the whole idea that Christmas is about Jesus' birth and honoring Jesus with the priorities that Jesus would have in the world, especially amongst marginalized people, that what we've done is made it more about us. And it's become kind of one of the biggest gluttonous feast days on the Christian calendar.
Reverend Mike Slaughter is lead pastor of Ginghamsburg Church outside Dayton, Ohio, and author of the book Christmas Is Not Your Birthday, in which he urges people to consider what Jesus might like for his birthday.
What we need to see in Christmas, regardless of what religious background or no religious background, is the purpose of Jesus was to serve the needs of the world.
To that end, for the last 8 years, Slaughter has issued a Christmas challenge to his congregation.
We've simply said, whatever you spend on yourself, bring an equal amount for a focus we have in our community or the world.
Through what they call the Christmas Miracle Offering, the church has built 243 schools and 19 clean water facilities in Darfur and a health clinic in South Sudan. He says children have been among the most enthusiastic supporters.
That's one of the things that surprised me the most. I really thought we were going to get pushback from kids, that kids would not understand this. And what happened was the kids began to worry that if they got presents, other children would die. I was shocked.
The church also supports several projects to help the local community, which has been hard hit by the economic downturn. There are GED programs, jobs programs, and food pantries. Marcia Florkey directs the church's outreach ministry called New Path.
We've been really blessed because we have a lot of folks here who are really concerned about their neighbors, who really want to do all they can to love their neighbors.
In recent years, several international humanitarian organizations have been sponsoring projects to help others at Christmas time. For example, through Operation Christmas Child, Samaritan's Purse urges people to pack shoeboxes of gifts for needy children. Since 1993, the group says it has delivered more than 100 million boxes around the world. Now, more local churches are also calling for a new, more spiritual look at Christmas gift giving.
Come and experience the joy and the peace of Christ, the perfect gift at Christmas. Merry Christmas.
The Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Washington has an initiative called Find the Perfect Gift. The United Methodist denomination has launched a million-dollar campaign called Reclaim Christmas. In Lake Junaluska, Pastor Chuck Wilson wanted Long's Chapel to be part of it.
We know that we're not going to completely debunk American consumerism, but we do encourage great participation by just placing before our people dozens and dozens of opportunities for giving.
Many of those opportunities were represented at the alternative market in the Fellowship Hall. Families like the Gayers could buy fair trade coffee and chocolate to benefit United Methodist relief efforts. Or they could give a donation in someone's honor to build wells in Africa. At one table, members of a church missions team sold purses made by a woman they met who runs an orphanage and school in Kenya.
It's really neat when people come over here and they can buy them and give them as gifts. And so, you know, this is going all the way to help some kid maybe have lunch or breakfast or get an education.
11-year-old Jarek and his 10-year-old brother Clay bought necklaces from a mission that works in Africa.
It's a win-win for everybody because I really like this necklace, but the money goes to more than
a
just
good cause.
Yeah.
The Gayer family also buys gifts for needy local children through a program called Christmas Angels.
Jarek delivers gifts with me on the day that we deliver for Christmas angels, and he gets to see that, you know, sometimes life isn't always as nice as he has it at home.
It's fun, but it's like life touching because it's like you know that, okay, I have all this stuff, and when you go to the person's house, it's just like, like that, it just like touches your heart.
This year, Long's Chapel also worked with the group Stop Hunger Now to pack meals that will be shipped overseas. In one afternoon, the church put together more than 10,000 meals for Haiti. Clay says for him, that's the real meaning of Christmas.
Christmas is not mostly about yourself. It's mostly all about giving.
4,000 meals!
Pastor Wilson says behind all their efforts is a desire to honor what they believe is the ultimate Christmas gift, Jesus coming into the world.
We believe in this important kind of theological concept called the incarnation, that God came and got with us. God brought himself in the person of Jesus and placed himself before us and came in the form of a child.
As a Christian, to me, one of the greatest miracles, you know, we talk about the miracle of the resurrection, but the greatest miracle to me is the whole idea of the incarnation, is that God would reveal God's self in a humble human being.
And Reverend Slaughter believes that's indeed a birthday worth celebrating. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
The religious landscape of the United States is being reshaped by the explosive growth of the Latino population. One in six Americans today is of Hispanic origin, and that number is expected to double by 2050. What's changing in the Latino community is the once predictable dominance of the Catholic Church. Today, many Hispanics are flocking to evangelical Protestant denominations. Deborah Potter has our story.
Worship begins at 2 on Sunday afternoons at this Assembly of God Church in suburban Washington, D.C. Hours later, it's still going, the sanctuary packed with congregants praying in rapid-fire Spanish. Membership at Iglesia Cuadrangular El Calvario has doubled in less than 2 years. The pastor says most of those who come are immigrants from Central America and former Catholics.
A lot of people, they call themselves like Catholic on this case, but most of it because of tradition, but they really don't know anything about it.
What these worshipers do know is that they found a home in this evangelical Protestant church.
They like to be feeling free, you know, freedom to worship the Lord, especially with our heart, the way the Lord likes it when we do it with all our heart.
Most Hispanics in the United States still call themselves Catholic. They make up an increasing proportion of the church. Over the past 15 years, the number of Catholic churches offering Mass in Spanish has tripled to more than a quarter of all parishes.
The response never seems to be enough for the numbers, because every time a parish opens the door and welcomes immigrants, it's filled up. The influx of immigrant Catholics has kept the Catholic Church membership, you know, around 70 million. That's definitely a trend.
Almost half of Catholics under 40 are Latinos, according to the Pew Research Center. But the church's hold on second and third generation Hispanics is not as strong. Just 40% of Latinos whose grandparents were not born here say they are Catholic, while 30% now call themselves Protestant.
I hear people come to our church and say, "What time is Mass?" Or they call me Father. So I know they come from the Catholic. And they just said, "You know, it's just so different. I love it here. I feel like you're talking to me. I don't feel like it's just so rigid."
Wilfredo de Jesus became pastor of New Life Covenant Church in Chicago a dozen years ago. Born in Chicago to a Puerto Rican mother, de Jesus, like many in his congregation, is not fluent in Spanish.
Our primary language is English, yet we still love our culture. We still love our rice and beans. We still love our music. But we love to hear the Word of God in the language that we can understand.
Under De Jesus, the church added services in English and experienced explosive growth.
We have to obey God's command, whether we like it or not.
New Life is now the biggest Assembly of God church in the country, drawing more than 17,000 worshipers a week at multiple campuses. Many grew up Catholic, but found in evangelical churches something they longed for.
Every time that I come to a service, I always get something new. I always have something to work towards, you know. I feel like the love and of everybody, like we're like a family, and I feel just welcomed and appreciated.
I think it's just that personal touch. It's about you being with God, you being with Jesus, and you having that personal relationship with him, and how that affects the rest of your life and every single day, every single minute, every single hour, and how do you use all of that to reach out to the communities, to reach out to the world.
New Life calls itself a church for the hurting, providing shelter for these women as well as food, clothing, and support to many people in need, and jobs at a cafe run by the church. Marilyn Garcia came here after 13 years of drug and alcohol abuse and now runs a New Life ministry for women.
What would have happened to you, do you think, had you not found this place?
I would have been dead, you know. I would have definitely been dead. Towards the end of my addiction, I was too much of a wimp to commit suicide, but I was drinking my life away. I was having unprotected sex with multiple men. I was working the streets as a prostitute, which I did for 5 years.
New Life's success is visible throughout this Chicago neighborhood, where the crime rate has dropped as the church has grown. Pastor De Jesus believes any church can have a similar impact in its community, so he's sharing his playbook. You are welcome in this place, oh God. 300 pastors and church leaders from across the country attended New Life's third annual conference to learn how to jumpstart their ministries from the man people call Pastor Choco.
God is saying, I've got the money. I got the resources. What I need is a church that's willing to meet the needs of these people. Is that you? Is that you?
We're a congregation today of about 100. And we see bigger things ahead of us. We see greater things ahead of us. And we're here to see and learn from Pastor Choco what he's done and how we can utilize some of the models that he's implemented to further God's kingdom.
The pastors also learned firsthand how New Life ministers to the homeless.
Hello? God bless you, sir. How are you?
Some believe the election of the first Latin American pope could help the Catholic Church retain more Hispanics.
I think that symbolically is very meaningful. However, we cannot expect every Hispanic Catholic immigrant to remain Catholic as they enter into U.S. society. However, I think that the Catholic bishops will continue to open up the doors so that Catholic immigrants from Latin America and other continents will find in the Catholic Church their home away from home.
Not asking you to join my church. You can join any church you want. But you need to learn how to wait on the Lord. If you raise your hand, would you do me a favor? Get out of your seat and come quickly. Come.
And they do come, forming a new community united in prayer. More of them every week.
In the name of Jesus.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Deborah Potter in Chicago.
Televangelist Paul Crouch died last week at the age of 79. Crouch was the founder of the Trinity Broadcasting Network, or TBN. He turned it into the world's largest Christian broadcasting network, allowing him to reach millions with his prosperity gospel message and his signature pleas for donations. Finally, on our calendar this week, for Christians, this weekend brings the second Sunday of Advent, the season leading up to Christmas. Also, Buddhists around the world observe Bodhi Day, the festival commemorating the day the Buddha found enlightenment. And Latino Catholics will celebrate the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. According to tradition, the Virgin Mary appeared to an Aztec peasant named Juan Diego in the 16th century, leaving an image of herself on his cloak. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. And visit our website, where there's always much more and where you can listen to or watch each of our programs. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more scenes from last year's Our Lady of Guadalupe observances.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.